If I look at the United States, we are just so distracted right now by so many things that it's almost shocking that people are even bringing things like that to the forefront at a time when we're experiencing what we do. We have Dancing with Robots in 2013 that told us exactly what was coming. We have the World Economic Forum in 2018 that was telling us by 2025, 42% of workplace tasks will be automated. We absolutely knew this was on the radar. We ignored it. Stop tolerating things that you shouldn't be tolerating. The solution to teacher burnout isn't magic school. The solution to teacher burnout is, why are you burnt out in the first place? Let's solve for those systemic issues versus giving you a band-aid to make you feel like you've got a solution, when in the long run, not only is it probably going to make you obsolete, it's going to make you poor.
Greetings and welcome everyone to the Amp to 11 podcast. It is my honor today to, alongside my co-host Rebecca Boltzma, introduce Saba Kidwai, the CEO and futurist at Designing Schools. Saba, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We are so thrilled to welcome you. Like, we're so thrilled to have you. We've had you on our radar.
Saba has been traveling around the world for our listeners, and we have been playing scheduling Tetris for months, and it's really an honor that this is finally coming to fruition, because Saba, you are one of the leading voices in AI innovation, the future of education. And so audience members, you'll see soon enough that this was worth the wait. Saba, would you be willing to share with our audience? You know, we love to frame what is your narrative? What is your journey? What's your hero story? How did you get to the point where you are right now, and kind of share with our audience what guided you and your purpose to getting to meet to be on this stage that you are today, in the voice you carry in education and AI?
You know, it's so funny. It's like definitely not a pretty story. It's like, you know how people always say, take that challenge and create what it is you wished you once had? I feel like that's literally it. And I always say, like, I wear so many different hats, but I think what predominantly brings me to this work is like my experience as a student. I always say how I graduated in 2007. And I was the total opposite of who I am today. I did not have a good understanding really of like existing and emerging technologies that were gonna like shape my academic and professional life. And the reason I make that distinction is I actually had every single technology available to me personally. Like, my dad was very into technology. So like, you know how most people are like, oh, we have our phones recorded now, like when we're growing up because of the iPhone. Well, our dad was like really into like videography. So like our entire lives have been documented ever since like the 80s. However, translating that into my professional life was something I did not have exposure to at all. And, you know, 2007, if you remember, a couple months later is the recession. So got my first job, did all the things I was supposed to do, but also a couple months later with the recession in 2008, got my first layoff notice. And so, long story short, it was really navigating the complexity of like, wait a minute, I did all these things, I have all these skills, why do I keep getting these layoffs? What is up with the world of work? Like, why are things so different? And then also kind of looking back and realizing, wait a minute, in 2007, if a ton of people were like losing jobs, losing homes, much of actually what we see happening right now, why, like, how did these people on the flip side launch iPhones like Steve Jobs, build the entire app economy, which we can't even imagine our lives without today? And how did we get to a place where some people get access and exposure to these ideas and get to be a part of this and other people don't? So once my career finally settled down in about 2014, I became very interested sort of in this question of why we don't get an understanding. So I was like, okay, clearly a bunch of people knew. So like, why not me? I went to a really good university and all that stuff. And yeah, so in 2014, like, we knew the next big frontier would be artificial intelligence. We didn't have any idea that what it first manifested as kind of would be what would go mainstream in that way. But it's been, that's what sort of brings me to this. So I spent a lot of time sort of researching and looking at the mindset and skills people would need to be successful in this era.
Fascinating work. So what does a typical day or week or month look like for you in the work that you do, Saba?
That's so funny. There is no typical anything. I'd say the only common theme is that I get to meet incredible people doing incredible things. And the reason I highlight that is I think this is such a hard time where we have such a leadership void from policymakers, you know, in so many different areas, that when you go across the country, you know, especially in the United States, I will say, compared to other places where you do perhaps have more governance and whatnot. But I think especially in the United States, the way in which communities and people are coming together to design what's next, to educate each other, to create with each other, is probably like the most consistent part of the work that I do.
Do you know what? You've actually set it up really great because one of our favorite things to do on this show, it's something Brett brought to the show that I just love. We like to do this thing where we talk well about people behind their backs and how that's something that's kind of great that doesn't happen enough. But you mentioned you're working with amazing people. Wondering if you wanted to take a minute and tell us about some of those people. Tell us some great things about them behind their backs. So when they find out, it makes their day.
Oh my gosh, I find this so hard because there are so many people. So I always time frame it as people that perhaps I've seen in the last 1 month or people that I have actually seen in the last like 2 weeks. So let's just do the last 1 month. And I would say some of the most incredible things I've seen, one would be Lake County in Illinois. It really, really, really is such a beautiful example of what happens when like one person. So I met Superintendent Jeff Fout, who's the superintendent of Community District High School 117 in Illinois. And I met him a couple years ago at AASA when they did like an AI summit. And he was like, I want to like go all in with AI. Like, there's just like some leaders right now, so very ready to go all in. And he was one of those people. And so, we've been working together for the last year and a half. But I love it because you know how people always say, like, it just takes one person to create like momentum in a movement? He not only did it for his district, but he brought all the superintendents together from Lake County, and they do these like monthly sessions. But it's been incredible to see how that one person created that one community group of people and then went on, and those people are now taking it back to their teams. And it's just like how things can spread in that way within community when people like share with each other and do those things. So I'd say that's one. I would say another, oh my God, okay, this one is amazing. Okay. So his name is Warren Appel. Okay. And he is from the, oh my God, I want to say the international school in Japan. I'm not remembering the exact name, but Warren is his name, Warren Appel. Everyone should look him up and everyone should look at what he's doing because I'll tell you, I did a keynote at a leadership conference called IRCOS, which is in East Asia region. And he was one of the presenters there. And what I loved about his presentation was not, it was practical, it was great, he was giving great tips, but there was an enthusiasm in his leadership and his messaging that I wish we saw more of when people share about this work. And just, the access he had given people to tools, but the strategies he was giving, it just, those are probably my two highlights in the last 1 month.
Rebecca is obviously doing this work on an international level, right? She's getting her master's in Europe. She lives and does great work in Canada and then also here in the United States. You've talked about the work you're leading even beyond those spheres. Globally, where are you seeing like the best levers in terms of utilizing your positions that are having the biggest impact in changing mind shifts? You've mentioned a leader who's leading from the top. Where are you seeing the biggest breakthroughs when people try to like lean into certain strategies or frameworks? Just your thoughts from the field.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about things globally, I think context matters so much. I think there are parts of the world that are way less distracted than others. And I would say if I look at the United States, we are just so distracted right now by so many things that it's almost shocking that people are even bringing things like that to the forefront at a time when we're experiencing what we do. So I would say the first thing you'll notice anytime you step outside are people are just not as distracted. They can actually put their focus, their energy, and attention on what matters most in this moment, and they're able to kind of build and leverage that work. I also say that context also matters in terms of like the social systems I think that you have established. So, for example, people like you're going to have a totally different experience when you're talking to people, say, in like Finland or Sweden, than you are, say, like here where we are, compared to, say, like Singapore, Asian, these people. Like, there's so many other factors at play in terms of how worried people are or what people are doing. I would also say the one thing that I think has like been really, really resonating with people is the idea of how to be more ambitious with what people are asking AI tools to do. This is, if there was one thing I would probably say that has just been so invigorating to see, like that just brings me so much joy, is this concept of just like human agency and how some people gravitate to that a lot more and just believe that more is possible for themselves than others. And it's a really big part of like all of my keynotes and everything that I do is we teach this like spark prompting framework, which is basically just an empathy interview. But the whole purpose behind it is be more ambitious about what you want to solve, what you want to create, what you want to build, what you want to ask. And seeing that sort of like moment for people, I would say if there's one framework that's been super transformative, at least in the things that I've seen, it's probably that.
I love that focus on empathy. That's a great idea. And I like the idea of being more ambitious. Part of my favorite thing to do is to explore all the new tools as they come out and try and think bigger about how they can help people while also trying to figure out how to use them in ways that are ethical. I spent the weekend exploring some of the new AI browsers that have come out and the agents within the browsers, which are problematic on a ton of levels, but I was trying to find ways that they could be actually helpful. You know, we go back to that central idea of how do we use AI in ways that save us time so we have more time to do the things we want to do. And I do see a lot of great possibilities. It was able to, for example, I've had, probably like you, I have hundreds of research papers and documents and PDFs scattered throughout my Google Drive. And I actually used an agent to go through and put them all on a spreadsheet in a database with their annotations and file them into an organization system for me. So there are ways, hopefully, that that can work. But in terms of AI tools that you've been experimenting with or playing with lately, what has impressed you? What has made you excited about the future? What has made you uncomfortable? Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing.
So I would say because of the work that I do, I always say there is only so much attention and energy we have for where we can learn or where we can put our efforts these days. There's something new coming at you all the time. So I'll share the answer to the question, but I'll also share the strategy because I think it's really helpful. One of the big shifts we made this past summer, you know, as I was reflecting on just like everything that I'd been doing and where was the white space that I wanted to spend my time and energy? It was sort of the difference between individual use of AI and organizational use of AI. There's actually a huge difference. And I think a lot of times when people talk about AI, they're talking about what works great for individuals, not what works great for an organizational deployment and what's actually practical and feasible and scaling in that sense. So for that reason, I can't say I personally experiment with a ton of tools in depth to where I have the nuance and experience to talk about the ins and outs. The two that I would say I have gone the deepest with, because I always look for, okay, even when I'm selecting a tool, I look for, number one, how evergreen are you? Can I grow with you? It's great that I can do this with you today, but as I become more ambitious, as my skill set builds, are you going to grow with me? And can I keep growing with you? Or am I going to hit a bar and now I've got to go start over square one somewhere else? So this is one of the first criteria I look for. So we also look for longevity. We look for so many different pieces. And so the two that I go really deep with are Gemini from Google and Canva. Not only do I like these two as tools and what the quality at which they are giving people sort of output and just ways of being able to actually do things, they have probably the most beautiful vision for what they believe is going to be coming as well. So we look for these two things a lot. What is your vision? And also what is, you know, practical application? Or can you actually fulfill your vision? And, you know, if you both Canva and Google actually just in this past week came out with something, Google with their huge emphasis on the learning sciences, right? Like this is our vision for the future and what we think and where we're headed. And then Canva with the most beautiful keynote I've heard probably in like, I can't even remember when, talking about the imagination age. So when you take sort of Google's learning sciences, practicality, all these pieces with Gemini, and the fact that they're getting better and better and better by the day. Then you take Canva and the idea like, hey, we're going to give you every single possible design tool to help you bring that imagination, to nurture that imagination. This to me is what we call your AI dream team. And what we love about these two even more, free for education. And I don't understand why right now you could get 90% of done what you need. I wish more people would go deep, 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 throw out all the other garbage you're using, your magic schools, your brists, your all this other nonsense, go so deep with these tools. And I think we could solve 80% of the challenges that we have by just focusing people into that zone. So for that reason, I also focus into that zone because that's what we're supporting with. So we're always experimenting, always doing different things with that. But then I would say like on the side, the one that I'm probably most impressed with in my personal life is Descript. I think for anybody who did anything creation-wise prior to AI, podcast, YouTube creation, show notes, I mean, you name it, whether you are outsourcing it and paying money, you know how expensive that was to get people to just write show notes for you and edit things and do all that kind of stuff. To watch AI tools now do that, I think that is probably the thing that has left me most in awe is editing. I've been video editing like ever since I can remember, and to watch an AI tool now do it with the type of precision that it does it, also watching how quickly the capabilities have advanced just on a personal level is probably one of the most like eye-opening. And then in terms of the ones that I think is the scariest, what I usually say, and honestly I don't know enough about this space, but the way I kind of look at it is I like to be within an ecosystem. And I think I have this experience because, we use WordPress on the back end for our website and all the things we do. And one of the things that I find, if somebody, people always ask me, like, oh, I'm starting this, what website should I use? And I always say, like, decide first of all whether you're going to have a dedicated team for your site or not. Because when you choose to do a route like WordPress, for example, every single thing you need to do has to connect to a third party. And the moment you open up that connection, you're vulnerable. One thing goes wrong, a ton of things can happen along the way, and systems break and things like that. So I think of AI tools in a very similar way. I like to stay within an ecosystem because every time I have to connect something to something, I always say there's like a little, like if I'm in a bubble. So for example, with Google Gemini, it connects to my Drive, it connects to this. I wouldn't be surprised if what you said you did with the agent, you wouldn't be able to do with Gemini itself. Maybe not 100% to that degree yet, but once they bring the agent in, you will be. So when I have to connect a third party to something, to me, there's a little gap in the middle. And that gap to me is a vulnerability. And so the more I can avoid that vulnerability, the better off I think we are. So, and then the last one I'll say on a personal level, I don't use this one as much, but my team does, is ClickUp. I think, again, that integration, people who are building for the future and thinking about designing, thinking about reimagining work, these are all the things we look for a lot is vision. We listen to a lot of founders and their talks and things that they do as a way of determining where are we going to put our effort, because there's no doubt there's a learning curve. It doesn't matter how good you are, how long you've been using something, there is a learning curve involved.
Great advice. Great advice. Those are all great tools. And you're right. I'm sure those agents will end up coming, but the big problem with is exactly what you mentioned, those gaps that then can let malicious actors in, cause violations and security risks. Something kind of on the ethics side with EdTech and things that we talk about a lot are sometimes the concerns of locking into an ecosystem, because we all remember when Google started free for everybody, and then suddenly you had all your lessons and everything in there, and suddenly it cost money. So there are pros and cons on both sides, but I do agree from a security standpoint, you're bringing up a lot of really great points.
One thing you mentioned that coincidentally, I really actually had like a long drive yesterday, and I thought a lot about this analogy. You mentioned that you're very creative and you're an artist. And I was thinking about how teachers are true artists, right? Like you're constantly building, and it's like you're building with constraints, right? So we know that's one type of art. Like, what can you make when you have this much time and it has to meet this goal? And teachers do it daily. They're truly artists. And I think most teachers don't even recognize how brilliant they are and like the daily creation they come up with literally every night for the students they're going to see the next day. And then I started to think about AI and why this has been such a struggle. Like, why is it this exact thing been such a struggle for many teachers to figure out how it kind of fits in with their previous routines? And I think one of the challenges is like they're used to having certain constraints. Like, so like, here's the frame. Now you have to create within that frame, literally frame or framework. And so I'd love to hear from you. You're working with some innovative leaders. I'm sure there's times where you're working with teachers or leaders where they're not seeing it yet. Like, how are you meeting people where they are and bringing them along? What are some of your like first steps that you do to get people to kind of unlock and feel like they're on a journey with you? Kind of like you're mentioning a journey with a tool.
Okay, so I'll give you a very honest answer, but I'll also caveat it with it's not for everybody. So, like, I am not for everybody at all. And I will tell you also the value where this comes from. One of the things that I think about a lot that I don't think we talk enough about in this space at all is wealth inequity. I hate it. I hate looking around in our world and seeing the insane inequity. Like, right now, like, I had no idea, and maybe this is just my ignorance, I don't know. I had no idea that 1 in 8 Americans relied on SNAP for food. Like, that number is shocking. Like, it's shocking. 1 in 8 people rely on the government for food. So this week, while some of us were door dashing and, doing whatever without even thinking twice about what we were eating and what we were doing, 1 in 8 people had no idea what was coming their way. And I think that's wild. Like, I think that's wild in a world where we have so much access and exposure to opportunity, to make money, to do so many different things. So I am not one of those people that believes like, it's okay, you can take your time. Oh, we'll just meet you where you are. No, you are behind. And in a country like the United States, where your job is your healthcare, is your childcare, is basically your whole life, you don't get that luxury. You don't. And I think we hurt people more than help them. So I will say, I really preface this for people. Like, look, this isn't easy. And you're also behind, right? Like, so I'm also not one of those people that believes AI is new and, oh no, this just came and we don't know what to do. And we have, no, we have Dancing with Robots in 2013 that told us exactly what was coming. We have the World Economic Forum in 2018 that was telling us by 2025, 42% of workplace tasks will be automated. We absolutely knew this was on the radar. We ignored it. And when you ignore a challenge for a decade, and then all of a sudden you're forced into a corner to now adapt, there is no way to tell anybody this work is now going to be easy for you. It's a very hard thing you now have to do. However, one of my mentors said, when you raise the level of expectation, you must raise the level of support. So when I go in there and I frame this up for people, personally, I find they respect and appreciate the frankness and the honesty about the moment. Then we say, the best part about this moment is we don't have to do this work alone. This is really probably the biggest differentiator when I look at who were the people that were doing this work pre-AI. When you think about your ADEs, your Microsoft innovators, your Google innovators, all these people, I literally now say it was a hobby for us. It was a hobby. And then one of the biggest advantages that I see of this moment is that work took so much energy, so much effort, like you've literally had to make it a hobby, whereas now, within minutes, with the right approach and the right tools, you can solve for what most people weren't able to solve for in 10 years. And so the next thing we do is once I frame that up, the good news is we don't have to do this work alone. Don't think of AI as a tool. Think of it as a teammate. These days we're going in with Gemini and Canva, and we teach the Spark framework. The hardest part that I find about this moment is so many people have become used to those constraints. They don't question them anymore, right? So that's why we go back to like human agency a lot. Like, what do you not like? Like, what do you not want to tolerate anymore? Stop tolerating things that you shouldn't be tolerating. The solution to teacher burnout isn't magic school. The solution to teacher burnout is, why are you burnt out in the first place? Let's solve for those systemic issues versus giving you a band-aid to make you feel like you've got a solution, when in the long run, not only is it probably going to make you obsolete, it's going to make you poor. And I think this is really, really, really important for people to understand now. That's not to say that everybody should go out and do whatever. I just think everyone should have access to that knowledge so they can make those choices for themselves. If you're happy and you believe what you're doing is going to get you the outcomes in life that you want, great, go down that path. But I think there's a lot of people that don't know. And I think we should tell them, and it's our job to tell them if we know that and we're going to be in this space, not just to be like, here's a prompt that's going to help you work a little bit faster for things that we probably shouldn't even be doing in the first place. And so I find that that conversation, it just ignites, like that's why it's called spark. We call it, we ignite that human spark within yourself. What do we want the world to look like? What do you want your job to look like? And that's why I really love the Canva keynote, because when you think about imagination, it's something we're all born with, right? Like I have like a niece who's 3 and a nephew who's 7. And the number of times they just have ideas and they have things they wish they could do. Today, like for example, the other day, my niece, she's like a little queen at like hiding things, and she hides them so well, nobody can find them. And one day she hit something of my nephew's and he woke up and he was so sad. He's like, I just wish I had an app where I could just tell it what it was and it could find it for me. And so today, the idea that we can open up like Canva code, right? And be like, okay, tell me what you want your app to do. This is what it could look like. The idea that we could go into ChatGPT, type a couple sentences, put it into Miro and get a literal prototype. These are things that people weren't even able to do before or had to spend so much money doing. So I think like putting that confidence and thinking about imagination as a muscle that we build over time is something really, really, really important. So that's what we do. And we do this in 60 minutes. We do this in 60 minutes. We go from here's the problem, here's where we're currently at. Let's be super blunt and honest about it. And then let's look at what we can do to solve for this, because we can do things. And I think if you couldn't do something, then it's hard to do the first part. And I think that's maybe why for so long, maybe we haven't gone as ambitious on saying things as transparently as we should. But today, when you can give people the support, I think we can be a little bit more ambitious about framing the problem.
I love that you bring up how creative kids are and how they have these ideas and they're open to this change and these kind of things. It's It's super interesting to watch. We're always panicking about how are we going to get kids ready for the future. And the truth is, a lot of the kids, at least the ones I work with, I have four kids, they're kind of figuring it out. They aren't as worried about it as we are necessarily. And they also have more creative ideas than we do. I know Brett's kids are always coming up with like really creative ideas. You know, his kids are younger than mine. And I feel like you have a story about that, don't you, Brett?
Yeah. So this morning, just before we started, I just was in a local school district near here. I'm going to shout them out. It's Briarcliff School District up here in New York. And so I'm going to give a keynote to their entire staff next month. And one of the ways we've been working with them and other districts is we interview their students. And I'm calling this speaking series, Growing Up and Learning in the Age of AI. And so we ask, similar questions, but we also literally just get consent. We tell them don't say anything that could be a violation of PII or FERPA. And just have a conversation. And so today we had 10 students from sixth grade to 12th grade and like really diverse in a number of ways, but especially like they were just like randomly picked, which made it so authentic. And both myself and my colleague, Versha, as soon as the kids left, we were like, that was the most interesting interviews we've ever had. And we immediately told the superintendent and their team they're in there. But here's what made it like such a full circle moment. So one of the students, I sit down and I look across and they're already seated, the students. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Before we start, is your mother's name blank? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, you're not going to believe this, but I only know you from Facebook because your mother posts about you. But your mother, my brother, your brother, your uncle and me, we probably spent more of our childhood together than anyone else in my life. And I've never met this girl. And this girl is brilliant. And she's, slightly older than like we broke up, because she's like now in high school. But she's so brilliant. All of them are. And I'm sitting here thinking of things like happened like 30 something years ago in like her grandmother's basement. And we didn't have anything with AI and like how creative we were as kids, just making stuff up on the fly. We're going to start a band. We're going to do this. And she's like next level thinking. But the cool part was how like thoughtful these students were, and so much of it was actually like, and we came up with like some phrases there, like they don't, not only did they like were so much like, I wish we had less AI, or like we just wish we had more rules, but the cool part was they were like, actually, like what bothers me is like if a friend, I can tell they're using AI, and like they were like, this one of our friends like bailed on this really big event to us and they left the prompt in the email or the text. And I was thinking so much about Rebecca, what you've shared with me about like, if you preface you use AI, it actually makes you more authentic than like people suspecting you're using AI. So I was teaching these kids, like be vulnerable and tell your friends, like, I have so many feelings. I had to use AI, but like, here's my brain dump if you really want to read it. And now they were like, oh yeah, if my friend did that, I would like, that would be awesome if they like shared when they used AI with me. And we talked about like an AI etiquette course on like just how to do this with your friends. And then this girl was like, yeah, sometimes I wish my mom wouldn't use AI for stuff. Like she like asks any tool a question. And then I'm like, mom, that's not right. And I don't know if she knows how to check that. So it was just like super interesting to hear from their perspective what they actually need help with. And then one kid was like, this is the last thing I'll say. Kid goes, before we start, and I mentioned like, don't use your name. She goes, will I be allowed to redact anything I say later? Like, sure. Yeah. Which was such an awesome question for a teenager to ask. But then at the end, he's sharing, he's like, so sometimes at night, if I'm deep in study in one subject and I know something needs to be done for completion, I will plagiarize AI, turn it in so I get my completion grade, and then I'll go back the next night and do it. And he's like saying this in front of the superintendent. And by that point, they'd lost like, they were like no filters anymore. But even them mentioning that, and then another student being like, I'm like, so is that cheating? And they're like, I mean, he's going back and learning it. So I think that's cool. But I wish there was a rule like don't do that or do that. And it's just anyway. Real time warp of the day and a real full circle moment. And these kids are brilliant, as we know they are. They're the ones you got to be asking these questions to.
I'm curious what Sav is hearing from the top concerns from students or from teachers or for education leaders. Specifically, Brett and I are both speaking at a conference in Tennessee upcoming, specifically to education leaders. And what are you hearing on your end? What advice are you giving to them? Because it's one thing to tell a room full of people, you just need to move. You need to get going. We need to move forward on this. But then what are they worried about? What's holding them back? And what are you telling them the next steps are?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing that's most missing for most leaders is a narrative. I think they are already, and this is where I go back to calling out distractions. When you distract your most important people with so many other things, you don't leave them room and energy to be able to focus on what matters most because there are many other things that they now have to prioritize and deal with. Or there is a feeling of uncertainty. And I think that's also really dangerous that also in other parts of the world, like there's always going to be uncertainty. But when you create a dynamic where like I have no idea what your mood is going to be tomorrow and who's going to be fighting with who and who's going to be doing what, it really, really, really moves consumers. And so economically, you have a problem in all areas, you have a challenge. And I think I see this weigh so heavily on people. And you pair that with, I'm too afraid to even say something because I have no idea how someone's going to react. So you pair like uncertainty, loneliness in your field with not enough safe spaces for people to come together on a regular basis because I don't know how someone else is going to react to something. This is a very emotionally difficult place to be when you also need to grapple with something you probably don't know a lot about that changes on you every single second because you're in the middle of a bunch of like corporate games where who can I be? How can I do one up the other person today in this new product or this new feature? Just I think emotionally we have to understand that landscape for people. So I think one thing that I find that works really well for people is they need a narrative and they need a box. They need a package. Like, look, I'm coming to you because I trust you. I'm investing my time coming to this conference, coming to this space, coming to do whatever. I need it all packaged up for me so that I can go back, fix it up, make it my own, and basically give me a box of ingredients so I can put together my own meal, right? Like meal prep this for me, basically. And I think that's one of the things that we try to do. People, like, here are the five things you should do in this moment before like XYZ that will help you over the next year. Like we're very confident in being able to give people a strategy for if you do these things, it will carry you through all the way through your next entire school year, right? So I think that's where people are mostly. I think once people have an understanding of the landscape, right? The tools, look, anyone can use the tools. The tools will teach you how to use the tools. This is the easiest part of the whole equation is how to use the tool. I think the hardest part for people is the framing of how do I go back and communicate this to people when I can barely wrap my head around what's happening. And I think once they get a little bit of that confidence, not even a lot, they just need a little bit of that confidence. They also realize, oh, this actually is very much connected to a lot of what I already do and a lot of what I already know. And I always tell people it's the biggest advantage we have in education, right? Like, take a concept, for example, like AGI. Whereas if you're an industry or you're like in that space, maybe every single day, maybe it's going to be there, maybe it's not. This date, that date, this. For us, we don't need to care. Right? It can be 2027. It can be 2030. I don't care. Why? Because my kids, regardless, are going to be graduating into a world where that will exist. So I can kind of operate with the premise that my kids are graduating into a world with AGI. I don't need to follow the hype. I don't need to be, back and forth with timelines and things like that. So I think there's a lot of things we can do to really frame things around, like, this goes back to like a lot of what we did in the documentary and my research at Design 39. So public school in San Diego, using design thinking for everything. And, it was funny in 2017 when I first, started that research, you think you're researching the skills and mindsets for AI, and you think you would assume that technology would be the biggest part of the conversation. And it was actually the most mentioned part of the conversation. What people mentioned more than anything else was how you build teams. This was actually probably by far the most important thing. And I think even right now, one of because now you're not just talking about human teams, now you're talking about human digital teams. So you've got like a whole other species now that you've got to learn to collaborate and like work with now. So I think this idea of how do we build trust amongst people, how do we build human agency, imagination, these are all things that you don't necessarily need AI for. Can it help you? Yes, absolutely. And I'll give you a really good example. There was an interview the other day at Masters of Scale with the CEO of Box and Anish Raman, who's the Chief Economic Opportunity something at LinkedIn. Anyways, they ask them, what do you think about young people? And the CEO of Box goes, I personally think this is an amazing time to be graduating. He goes, we should be getting these young people into our organizations because they're the ones who are going to shake things up. They're going to come along and they're going to be like, these are your processes. There's a better way to do this. And so one of the things I do is I ask leadership teams, when you think about shaking something up in your organization, what skills do you need? So let me just ask you guys, like, let's just do this right now for people. If you think about walking into a bureaucracy, let's just say you're a new teacher, 22 years old, walking into a school, and let's just say you did go to a university that gave you some AI skills and whatnot, and you're like, there's a better way to do this. What are the top two skills you think that person would need? I see a better way to do something. I'm going to go into this org and shake things up like the CEO of Box is asking people to do. What are the top two skills you need to successfully shake something up in an organization?
Confidence and creativity, I'd say. You'd need the confidence because you're starting at the bottom and it's intimidating, but also the creativity to be able to see things in a new and different way.
Absolutely. So you got confidence, creativity. Brett, add your to-do list.
Definitely curiosity.
Okay, curiosity.
And the other one might be, forgot all the C's, like I'm going to say like innovation or ideation, some version of that. I'll maybe make a new word out of that. Idenovation or something, but like making sure you want to move forward, but you're willing to do the cycles of refinement as well.
Absolutely.
I'd add resilience to the list too. I'd add resilience. I've been doing a lot of looking at that, but yeah, that idea of knowing that you'll probably get shot down a bunch of times, especially in established institutions.
Absolutely. And so if you think about it, AI can help you with all those pieces, but those are actually all very unique human skills that you need a lot of non-technology work to be able to execute on, right? So for example, like when I was at Apple and that resilience is the biggest piece, you have to know, first of all, basic communication, chain of command, right? You don't just walk in as an organization as a 22-year-old, go straight to the CEO of whatever and bypass everybody in between and be like, I think we should do this a better way, right? Like that's not how things are done. There's etiquette, there's chain of command. There's just certain things that you have to do the right way to be able to get what you want forward. So for example, that's one. I have to also have an understanding of like being able to pitch my idea. I think that's that ideation piece and that creativity piece that you both bring in. I have to know, okay, here's what the problem is. Here's the gaps that I see, but here's an entry point that I see for where we might be able to pilot something to do something a different way. I'm going to put together a pitch deck. I'm going to put together, you know, a short 5-minute presentation. I'm going to send an email requesting a 15-minute meeting, asking to come in and share and present this idea. I'm going to get that 15-minute meeting, do it with the right people. And then that person takes it and elevates it. At least at Apple, that was my experience. You want to get an idea for it, you don't go to Tim Cook. I mean, you can, but he's going to be like, that's not what I do. Like there's like 50 people like in the middle that we go through that manage this and are responsible for these choices. And so to me, a lot of that human work is probably going to be the most important for our kids going in, creating, doing things, building things. Not so much, can I talk to George Washington on a chatbot to learn about XYZ. I just don't see that. So I think those are the things that we talk about. And I think when people realize, okay, wow, we don't need to just throw AI everywhere, throw more technology everywhere. In fact, we can actually do the opposite in many scenarios and then use it in the right ways to amplify these human skills that we know matter. I think people's confidence skyrockets in what it is that they believe they can achieve and do.
Saba, I just want to also highlight, you know, I mean, I think one of the luxuries that both Rebecca and I get to have is meeting people like you in person at conferences and then literally getting to just sit and listen to you share this wisdom with us. You know, it's a true privilege for folks like besides just getting to hear you now on the AMP211 podcast, where else can they learn more about you? Like, do you have any upcoming books or newsletters perchance where they can engage with you?
Yeah, I feel like I always say it's like a choose your own adventure. Like I'm kind of everywhere. I experiment everywhere. I can't say if you join my newsletter list, you're going to get something every Monday at this time. Da, da, da. I'm like, not like, I'm more like if I'm creative and I'm feeling something and I want to share something, I will. I would say it's like choose your own adventure. If you like YouTube, I'm all over YouTube. If you like podcasts, I have a podcast for you. If you like being on Instagram, that's probably the place where you can be the most intimate because of stories. So you'll get a lot more of like my behind the scenes. You'll get a lot more of like, if I'm randomly reading something and I have an opinion that I know is going to be disappear in 24 hours, you'll get a lot more of like my rawness over on Instagram. I also really love Instagram and LinkedIn for like audio messages. I audio message with people all the time. So yeah, it's kind of like a choose your own adventure. You can go anywhere.
And you do have a book, correct?
I do have a book too. Yeah, I have a book too. I do. You know what's cool about the book is the book comes with 10 chatbots. So all the ideas in the book, you can literally jump on one of my chatbots and you can be like, okay, I have no idea how to do this. Like, help me. And it will literally help you implement the ideas in the books. I love books. I love reading. I think books change your life. And one of the hardest things, I think most people go to books because they want to change something or do something, but the hardest part is implementation. So I love the idea that we can complement books today with these AI tools to be like, okay, I read this idea. This is my goal. This is what I wish I could do, but I have no clue how to do that middle piece. Help me. Right. And I think that's just like, I think it's such a beautiful, empowering thing that we have in the world today. I think too many people try to use ChatGPT and like AI tools for like search and like very traditional things, which I mean, I guess is good. But to me, the biggest thing is I want to do these things. I have these dreams. I have these problems I'd like to get rid of. I have no clue how to do it, but maybe the AI tool does. And this is another big thing we share with people. Like, let's just humble ourselves. Like, we clearly are overwhelmed with our constraints. Like, the last 20 years tells us we are not capable of redesigning systems, of overcoming our constraints. The first thing you hear from anyone when you have an idea is, yeah, but maybe next month, maybe next meeting, let's have 10 meetings for this and blah. And your AI tool could care less. You can go constraint after constraint after constraint, and it just delivers, delivers, delivers. And I think that's a really empowering feeling when you learn to interact with it in that way.
I've never heard, I just want to give credit where it's due here. I've never heard of that idea of like a book with the accompanying chatbots. And like, as an educator, immediately I'm like, why? I hope textbook companies are hearing this and doing that. Like, that's such a brilliant idea. So just credit to you for coming up with that or incorporating it. That's such a fun engage. Like, that makes me want to read your book because that part's even equally as fun. I love reading and I love AI. Like, no one is, I've never heard of anyone putting it together. It's quite like that. That's so awesome. Great job. I'm out of questions. So I guess this would be the part of our episode, you know, the fan favorite where, you know, Saba, you now take the reins. You are the host for one question of the AMP 211 podcast. So we're going to flip the script. You can ask any question you'd like to Rebecca and I at this point, and we have to answer it. We're legally bound to answer it.
I am curious, you know, because, you know, like you said, you meet so many people and you see so many things. And I think this is, I always say, I just wish everybody could see everything I see. That's why I try to share as much as I do about everywhere I am online, because I think when you start to see, oh my God, wait a minute, it's not just me. Everyone's doing XYZ. Wow, we can do this. We can, like, you just get more excited when there's more momentum and more people. So I'm curious, given everything you see and everywhere you go, what's something maybe in like an opinion, maybe, let's say you had last year or in 2023, that maybe you're just like, wow, like we used to think this, but now I think this. That you want other people to know that you don't think they would know that. Given, like we said, right? Like you go to so many spaces. I think when you go to so many spaces, especially Rebecca, I saw you were just like the Marketing AI Institute, which is like, I mean, they are like, they are. I have two or three people who are my pulse check, who are like, okay, are you saying too much? Are you on the right track? Are you this? And that podcast is one of my pulse checks for, okay, I can go into a keynote and say this. Like, I'm not super off over here. There are people that believe this too. And so I love them. So, but here's the thing though, very few people are in that space and very few, especially in education. So we're thinking about an education audience in particular. And we're thinking, okay, you know what? I used to think this, but now I really need everybody to kind of have this opinion or see things this way because I've shifted my mindset now after this much exposure in this many places. What is that message maybe you would want to give to your audience or to people who are listening?
I'll go first. I think, a few years ago in the early days, I thought, this is going to be amazing. This is going to fix everything. This is going to be so great. This is so cool. And obviously, through my research and through what I do, like in futures and AI ethics and governance specifically, I live in a space where I see a lot of the challenges and risks. And so I now think we need to be very, very cautious and we need to go in with our eyes wide open. And we also, I've realized, can't wait for anyone to come and save us. Like you mentioned, we can't wait for someone to finally getting around to giving us PD or to give us permission and say it's time, you know, now for you to learn about AI. I think I feel way more strongly now about taking personal ownership over our AI learning and understanding and making the effort to see not only the bright and shiny, but also the risks so we can protect ourselves and people around us and hopefully advocate for better. So it's not like super great because I used to be like super optimistic and now I'm a little more balanced, but that's probably where I sit. How about you, Brett?
I think when I started my AI journey, I was always able to empathize, literally be like, oh, how would I use this as a blank teacher, principal, parent, student? And that was really healthy. And I think that's one of the areas I haven't changed my mind shift of like whatever stage or organization I'm presenting with, like really trying to think about, okay, what is the audience grappling with now? So trying to stay like getting to interview students and teachers from around the nation has been so helpful to be like, what we were talking about 2 years ago, a year ago, a month ago, isn't what's front and center in their lives right now. So you have to stay current and have these conversations with key stakeholders. I think the thing that has most shifted in my mind that maybe I used to take for granted is I'm like been beating the drum much more on like AI rules before AI tools and like really making sure people, like if you really think about it, where if education is quote unquote a game, no one is playing the same rules, and it's just having such a negative impact. It's creating fears where there shouldn't be, and not putting enough emphasis on the areas you should be afraid of, like what Rebecca is an expert in, and you're leading work in this field. So I think that's an area that I've like become hyper focused on, which is just getting people to a certain stage of this and really thinking about what does that mean to be fair, like down to like just what would a student need to see on an assignment in order for this to really feel like they know what they can and can't do today. And then more importantly, pushing the pedagogues to be like, why is that the most important thing right now about either using AI, not using AI, alignment to skill, getting them to think of like having that metacognition of like the same way you have to think about all these other skills and aspects when you create a lesson, a unit, something for students. What's your AI focus and brain telling you now? And that's a muscle that I didn't know we have to build much, much stronger and quicker, to your point, Saba, because like it's here. So that's probably the area I've shown the most like self-reflection and tried to be a more advocate for.
I love that, because so I'll just comment like briefly on each of yours, but like Rebecca, I think one of the things that I think, you know, you asked earlier about leaders, I think one of the things that people find really reassuring is when you tell them you can be excited and frustrated and scared at the same time. And I think there's so many, I would say this is such emotional work, you know, more than technology work. It's really like, it's human work, it's emotional work. And I always tell people, if you're only excited and you're not scared, you actually have no idea what's going on. And one of the hardest things is being able to balance both emotions together. And when you can, I think you can make, you know, to Brett's point, better decisions. And, you know, I'll go back earlier for a shout out, you know, this isn't in the last month, but, you know, Desert Sands Unified School District, about a year and a half ago, when they first were kind of thinking about AI integration and what they were going to do and their strategy, you know, Superintendent Kelly and Tiffany Norton, who I worked with, I think they will honestly go down in history as being the first organization that prioritized decision making for students over roles. And the reason I bring that to people's attention is, you know, there's this quote, I forget who says it. It's like, hard decisions now, easy life later, easy decisions now, hard life later. And I feel like at that time, it was a really hard decision to make. Like most people were giving people stoplights, telling people what they could and couldn't do and this and that. And because she made that hard decision, because as a team, they made that hard decision. No, we are not going to do this. We are going to prioritize decision-making. We are going to prioritize helping young people understand how to leverage what they have around them to give them the best opportunity. This year, it's been incredible to watch their student rollout, Gemini for all students, on little postcards with their framework is called RISE. And it's a mantra, you know, we tell everybody to make their own, but theirs is, how will you rise to the occasion when using AI? And they did that a year and a half ago. And this year, in January, the COO of LinkedIn said the most important interview question for every person to be able to answer is, tell me a story about a time you used AI at work or at home. And for kids, we change it to at home or at school. But when you hear somebody wanting to know a story, they don't care how proficient you are in the tool. They want to hear a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? What sparks your curiosity and your interest? Like, how do you get interested in something? How do you deal with the messiness of the middle? How do you make decisions? How do you make choices? Who do you involve? Do you involve anybody? And then what's the impact and the result? And what did you learn at the end? Because that is the only way for somebody to know, I can trust you. That's why ethics and integrity are such used words today. And the reason I bring this up is I hear way too many people wanting to monitor kids. And I understand it. I understand the need. I understand the safety. But one of the things that I've come to learn is that there are two groups of people right now in education. There are people who think about safety and ethics and integrity from 8 to 3. And there are people who think about it 24/7 for kids. And it's a night and day approach in the tools you adopt and the strategies you choose and the things that you do to help them. Because our kids are most vulnerable outside of school, not inside. No one's going home and using Magic School. Everyone's going home and using character AI. Everyone's going home and using ChatGPT. Everyone's going home to Instagram and Snapchat, where AI tools are embedded within there. But there's no monitoring. There's no nothing whatsoever. And there likely won't be. Right? There likely won't be. So I just really want to give Desert Sands a shout out because they have the most beautiful AI guidance. It's a beautiful framework for helping people make decisions, because I think that's one of the biggest things that workplaces are looking for. And just in life, people are looking for, how do we make decisions about leveraging technology in a way that's going to be human-centered and lead to more positive outcomes versus, you know, Rebecca, you mentioned like those challenges.
Oh, and you brought up so many there too, you know, the way that kids are using AI, how they're using it outside of school, who's watching it, what's happening. So If we try and end on a really positive note that you've brought us to here, and I like to turn my mind often to what happens if we get it right. What if it all goes right? Because we're so programmed to automatically go to what if it all goes wrong? So I'm curious, in your mind, if we get it all right, if we end up in an 11 out of 10 society with AI, what does that look like? What is the dream? What is the vision for how schools operate in that future where everything goes right?
So I'll give you two. I'll give you one like philosophical, and then I'll give you one super practical that I hope everybody who listens to this podcast goes and like switches on like right away. So maybe we'll put a link in there for them. I think the one that I think about often is there's so much hatred in today's world, right? But there's that quote, right? Like, united we stand, divided we fall. And I really hope, forget schools, because I think this is another challenge. Like, you can't just see school as a siloed entity anymore. Schools are connected to politics, they're connected to economics, they're connected to everything in life. And I really hope that no matter how much people hate each other, no matter how much like whatever you have for each other, you are able to get to a point where you're like, if we don't get our shit together, we're done, right? It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you are. Because, you know, this is sort of like a hallmark of a lot of like, you know, for example, I'm originally from like, I'm half Pakistani. When you go to Pakistan, unbelievable amount of wealth for a small fraction of people. But that small fraction of people, they can't live. Because they go outside, they're worried about this. Their houses have walls that are built up like all around. So even if you're doing well in society, but the people around you aren't, you don't live the best possible life that you can live, because the moment you step outside of that little circle, you're stuck, right? So you can't. You have to live in this like little bubble. So everybody benefits when we take care of everybody. And I hope we get to a place where we don't even need you anymore to like each other. We don't even need to like get there. Like, let's just agree to disagree. But we know that if we don't unite around human rights and human values, this other little species that we now have here on Earth with us is going to take us all over. And we're all going to suffer in some way. And I think a really great example of that is I didn't really think about this, but like, I guess like grocery stores, a huge part of their revenue obviously comes from people who have SNAP benefits. So it's not just the 1 in 8 Americans who are suffering right now. It's the grocery store owner as well. It's the businesses that rely on those people as well. So everybody has a ripple effect. It's not just that one group of people when that happens. So that would be from a philosophical perspective. I would love to see an 11 to 10 where we just put our differences aside. We center human rights the way they would should be centered. And we say, we need to all get it together. Otherwise this. And then my second one, I actually think the person who has just the best vision for like what can be an 11 and 10 for you today is Melanie Perkins. I was so inspired by her talk at Canva. I just think she has such a beautiful heart. She has such a history of being human-centered. I love her commitment to education, but you just have to watch the first 5 minutes. Like, don't even watch the whole thing if you can't dedicate like that much time. But her vision for how we move from the information age to the imagination age, and here's every single tool to help you do it. It's just, you can hear the humanness in her voice. You can hear the hope in her voice. And I think when you hear her speak, I think it empowers and really inspires you as well. So I would just drop a link to that so everybody can watch her.
First of all, I got excited hearing you talk about how excited you are by this person. So like, this might be how we close out the show. Because this allows you, and I'm gonna put in the asterisk and the preference and give you ground cover here. There's so many people in your network that obviously you can't possibly name all of them. I won't even allow you to. So if you could just name one or two people that get you equally as excited in this space that you want to shout out, that's going to help you reach that, you know, if we get it all right moment in education with AI and innovation, I think that'd be a great closing. Who else fills your cup and gets you feeling as energetic as you just made us feel?
100%, Jennifer Womble, that without a doubt. There's only one person who comes to mind. I can't even do Jennifer Womble without a doubt. And I'll tell you why. If every single person operated with her abundance mindset, and if she had like a little, you know how every these days everyone's taking NAD plus shots, everyone's taking anything and everything to be able to feel more energized, to feel more everything. If Jennifer Womble could create a little shot that we could all take to infuse within us her energy and her abundance mindset, I can't imagine how the world would be. I have never met a person who so selflessly gives and gives and gives and gives and empowers. You aren't in this space, I'm gonna get you in this space. You don't know this person, I'm gonna make sure you meet this person. And I think, you know, I actually think this is a problem in education, because, you know, people who are in education, who stay in education, they have a huge scarcity mindset, because you've been taught from day one, only a certain number of people can get A's, only one person's valedictorian, only XYZ people. It's scarcity, scarcity, scarcity. And she is just the embodiment of an abundance mindset and how every single person wins when we let everybody win. And I personally find this to be one of the most challenging parts of our industry. Her and Dan Fitzpatrick, I am, you know, there's so few people I can say that I really admire their messaging. In fact, I don't like most people's messaging, and I'm very honest about that online. I really admire his ability to bring people on a journey. He's one of the few people I'm like, okay, I wish I could be like you. I don't have that patience, but I wish I could be like you, because he has such a soft tone and this like really like bring you along demeanor, but he's a really great collaborator. He's again, an abundance mindset individual. And so these two people are, their values are great. Their work is great. Their vision is great. And they truly are dedicated to like a better world. So like those are my two.
Well, you are talking about one of our first AMP to 11 guests, Dan Fitzpatrick, and Rebecca is the same thing. And I hope one day you, all three of us, are at a conference and we can really do this. But you kind of just described, and now I think you've just encapsulated the perfect AMP to 11 guest. Obviously, an area of expertise that should be shared with people, but I think it's really that mindset and that passion you just encapsulate in two people who present themselves very differently, but have very similar core values to, I think, three of us as well. Jen Womble, the times I'm in person with her, she puts an arm around you. She will make sure everyone in that room that you should know, just to know that they exist and what kind of work they do. And I can't tell you the amount of people who she's like, you got to come on Brett's podcast. You got to come on AMP to 11. And I'm also like, if Jen is doing that, she's not doing it except that she actually believes that would be a good podcast. Like, she's not doing it for any reason other than like you two should talk and people should hear you two talk about education. And Dan is so similar in the fact that like he just wants people to feel inspired and to learn along the journey with him. So that's high praise, and those are two great role models. Rebecca, I don't know if you know them as well, like I don't know how you feel after that, but that's my take at least.
Yeah, you are our kind of people, Saba. We love having you here. We have the same thoughts. I'm inspired by you online constantly. I remember the first time you actually commented on one of my posts. I was so excited. So I'm so glad to be connected and learn from you today in this space. And we've been really looking forward to this. So thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Oh my God, no, thank you for having me. Like I said, I'm a listener. So it's like so fun to be on the other side. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't wait for our audience to hear it. Thank you, as always, for tuning into the AMP211 podcast. Thank you again to our amazing guest, Saba Kinwai. And on behalf of myself and Rebecca, thank you to our AMP211 audience. Have a wonderful day, and we'll speak to you soon.